With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send us a text at 2057. Email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. Love your feedback. And it's that time when we have our Professor Gardening Guru, the none other, the unique Wally Richards. Good morning, Wally.
Yes, good morning, Rodney, and good morning to all those hundreds and thousands of people out there listening to us eventually.
Yes. Now, I'm going to start. We're going to do some big stuff today. We're going to do a couple of questions. We're going to do a bit of gardening stuff, and then we're going to do this big topic that's been exercising you, and every now and then a reader of your newsletter gets a bit upset because they just want the gardening. But if Wally's onto it, we need to discuss it. Here's the first question, Wally. Rodney, your guest talked about seeds coming from overseas. I think this might have been another guest. I've nearly given up gardening because my seeds don't germinate. How sad is that? My seedlings go to seed quickly but don't self-seed. It has become too expensive for no produce. In the past, I'd let the cherry tomatoes or the parsley seeds drop into the ground and new plants would grow, but not now. Are the seeds treated to come into the country? What are the good brands that have reliable seeds? What's the answer to that, Wally?
Okay. Well, first of all, there is a problem bringing seeds into the country, because EPA, MAF, or whoever check everything to make sure that we're not bringing in something that could become a rampant infectious weed, etc. So there is controls. Besides that, I do know too that stuff coming in, if it's suspect, it gets irradiated. They bombard it with radiation, and then it will never germinate, for sure. The reason that's done on plant material or seeds or whatever is to stop bacteria, viruses, or whatever coming into New Zealand. So that creates a problem. You can bring seeds in. Whether the seeds are going to be any good or not is debatable. I brought in what I thought was senna seed, you know, from the senna tree that you use for constipation, etc. And I've got a lovely plant grow, and nothing like senna, that's for sure. In fact, it could become an invasive weed. It came through all right. The reason I did that was, of course, because of that bill that they were going to pass about not allowing certain natural remedies, etc. King seeds, Egmont seeds, there are two places where I get most of my seeds from. And generally speaking, no problems or no great problems in germination. But interestingly enough, I also had a recent email from a listener who was saying seeds just don't germinate. No matter what brand I'm planting, in the past, no problems at all. So I found that very interesting, because what would cause that? And the only thing I could think of is maybe radiation. And one of the problems that we're facing, and I think this is causing upsets with insects, unfortunately not with the pest insects, that people are saying, oh, heaps of butterflies, heaps of leaf hoppers and all the nasties, but where's the aphids, where's the ladybirds, where's the ladybirds, where's the beneficial wasps and honeybees, but plenty of bumblebees. Everybody's saying bumblebees are okay. These satellites up in the Never Never up there, beaming down 5G, so the whole planet is going to be covered with 5G cell phone, I think it's a problem. Arthur Fitzgerald, the guy who wrote the book Invisible Rainbow, he's been right on to it in recent times, that it is changing things. We're not used to that sort of radiation. And one of the things he wrote about recently was about horses and where horses having these little devices on them when they're racing to tell whether they've got a health issue or whatever. I don't know, but, you know, it's kind of like one of those funny watches you put on your wrist and it tells you how far you walked or something, you know, that sort of thing. But the horses have had severe reactions to it. In fact, they've been dropping dead on the race course.
Well, it's interesting. Not that long ago, Wally, I would have dismissed you as a raving lunatic. Now, not at all, right? Because I always used to trust technocrats and experts, right, that they would look into it. They wouldn't be doing it en masse on a huge scale if it wasn't safe. But they can't know, right?
Well, they don't take any notice. There's a lot of money involved in that technology, you know, cell phones. My partner from the Philippines, everybody's got a cell phone, even little one-year-olds in the cot have got their little cell phone. My God.
You've got to keep up. Well, here's my live birth. On Instagram. We'll get on to some more of that later on in the show, because a lot of things I used to take for granted I don't anymore. I got another question from about seeds, by the way? What about seeds that you buy from the garden shops, from Bunnings, you know, your typical seeds that you get there? Are they okay, you think?
It depends on the age, of course. And on the packet, it does have an expiry date, and they should ideally be within that date. The best thing to do is two things. A, if you're going to plant seeds out into the open ground or in a container or whatever, do that. But remember the old trick with blotting paper from days that have gone by when we used to have blotting paper at school. Now, I presume something like the paper towels, a bit similar to blotting paper, but we used to put seeds on a wet surface like blotting paper and leave them there and just keep them moist, and they would germinate or they wouldn't germinate. It's a very easy way to see, because you're not covering them and they're either going to happen or not. If you spray them with the magic botanic liquid, that increases the germination speed, so that makes a difference. And if you do that, as well as put some into a container or into open ground, and the ones on the blotting paper germinate good as gold, and the ones in the garden didn't, you know it's not the seed. It's something else. It's either
That's
they have
a good been- idea. Just throw a few on a blotting paper with a bit of MBL. Very good idea. Very good idea, Wally. I got something to tell you after this too that you'll be interested in. Here's another question. I'm in my greenhouse at the moment, taking all of the leaves off my tomato plants because they're covered in mold. Can you please ask Wally what would cause this and how to prevent it? My greenhouse is well ventilated.
Right. The mold is actually caused by an insect. The insect is called the tomato or potato psyllid, right? Now, that person has quite a bad infestation of them. To determine that they do have them, the best thing to do is look up on the internet, tomato psyllid, potato psyllid, on MAF website. You can see a picture of the nymphs. Now, the nymphs are very, very small, and you do need a magnifying glass to actually see them reasonably well, right? So if you find out what they look like, and then you go and check your plants and find out if you've got nymphs there. If you have, then that is the problem. They inject a toxin into the plant when they're feeding, and that toxin causes a bacteria effect, and up and down the trunk and on the foliage, the mold, right? So it's the insect you've got to control. And with the psyllid, once the populations get up very high, and I know in my particular case a couple of years ago, there was literally thousands of them, adults and nymphs, and tomato plants would get up to about my height, and they would just fail. You'd see this mold up and down the trunks and so forth, and tamarillos, even worse. I planted tamarillo, and tamarillos during the summer grow pretty fast. And it doesn't take long for a plant that's a few inches high to be up to about 5-6 foot high. And wow. Once they got up to there, this is in good conditions, of course, you know, nice heat, et cetera. Then progressively the bottom leaves would turn yellow and drop until there was no leaves left. And then little new side shoots would come from the axis between the trunk and where the leaf was, and then they would fizz and the whole thing would be dead all in one season, and that was from psyllids. The remedy for psyllids we have found, because no matter how often you spray with either natural or chemical insecticides, the populations are too big, they just don't control. Instead, we strengthen the plants by using what we call silicon cell strengthening. It makes the cells of the plant so tough that the nymphs, when they hatch out, they can't pierce the plant to feed, and of course they die fairly quickly. You've broken the cycle. It doesn't matter how many million adults are there laying eggs, none will ever become an adult. And in one season, you clean up your backyard completely of nymphs. The thing to do if people suspect that they might have psyllid or want to make sure they haven't got psyllid in their place is to grab yourself a potato at this time, and one that's got some sprouts on it, either one from the kitchen or whatever, it doesn't matter what it is, and plant that in the garden somewhere where you want to determine, like it's where you would grow to tomatoes or whatever, and let that come into maturity. If when it comes into maturity, underneath the potatoes that have formed are only about the size of a marble, it's starting to reshoot, that's psyllid damage. If the potatoes get to a reasonable size, and when you cut them in half, there's dark rings inside, that's psyllid damage. And that will tell you, and very simply and easily, if you've got psyllid problems. And then you next season, when you grow your tomatoes, tamarillos, potatoes, or whatever, you can use the cell strengthening to overcome the problem.
Very good, Wally. Now, I got a funny feeling that you spell psyllids not like you think you'd spell it. How do you spell psyllid to Google it?
P-S, psyllid. P-S-H-Y-I-L.
It's got an H in it, Wally. You sure it's got an H in it? I'm going to look it up now.
Yeah.
It's P-S-Y-L-L-I-D.
Yeah, that's the one.
My goodness. You never think, when you're saying psyllid, I'd be thinking, oh, C, whatever. Now, before we go on to compost, I made a discovery. Now, you got me growing wheatgrass.
Right.
And I tried it, and I thought, oh, that's all right. And then I realize now I've made a mistake, because I saw on Facebook a manual extractor for wheatgrass for juicing for sale. And I thought, oh, I'll buy that. and it was $100. It was a handle you turn. I've just looked up your site. I could have bought one for 90. So don't always assume because you're buying it on Facebook, you're getting it cheap, because I could have bought a brand new one for Wally. But I got this manual juicer and I turned the handle and it's got like a corkscrew. It's like a mincer, like the one you sell. Oh my goodness. How wonderful are they? I can't get over it. So we've been juicing. Funny enough, at the moment, I don't have any wheatgrass. It's only about an inch high. But I had silver beet that's getting a bit old. I put the green of the silver beet through. I added a bit of apple. I added a bit of orange. I added a bit of carrot. I added everything I could think of. And I just mushed up tomatoes and produced this drink. It is the gift of the gods, Wally. It is amazing. And, of course, the trick is, oh, you'll be able to explain this to me even better than I can, but I realize the trick is not to cut it up with the juicer. It's to squeeze it.
Mm. Yes.
You're a big fan of this, right?
Yeah. I learned a long time ago from whatever I read or at the time that juicers, electric type ones, except for the very expensive Oscar, which is exactly the same as your manual juicer, except it's motor driven, but it turns the screw and it squashes or squeezes the juice out. The other ones, the blades heat up. They kill the antioxidants and they kill the goodness of what you're juicing. So waste of time.
And they get all that fiber and they don't taste good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I found like silver beet just on its own a bit earthy, but you'd put in a bit of pineapple or a bit of apple or a bit of tomato. So each day we now juice this, and I don't know, we probably have half a tumbler each of this juice, and it's so refreshing and it tastes so great and it's fun. So I'm a convert and I'm busy hurrying my wheatgrass to grow so I can try that as well, because it's the wheatgrass. Am I correct in saying that's the one that has every element known to man?
Yes, as long as you put them into the growing medium, which is the important part, because if you just stick them into ordinary potting mix, you've got virtually hardly any, right?
Ah.
There's 114 minerals and elements known to mankind at this point in time. Now, in the ocean, the blue water of the ocean, all those minerals are present. 95% is sodium chloride, and the other 5% is everything else, selenium, boron, you name it, it's there. Every other element is in that 5% in perfect balance. So if we take something like, we have a product called Wally's Ocean Solids, which is the raw salt from the blue water. Even Himalayan salt, which is very mineral rich. If we take that, if we also take unlocking your soil, which is the dust from a whole range of rocks, because in rocks, there's a whole lot of minerals. So that's another source of all the minerals. And then if we take magic botanic liquid and add that to it, and that's the minerals from prehistoric times, the key to it is, you're overdoing it, but if something is missing in one of the products, it'll be probably in the other two. So you're definitely going to get the 114 minerals and elements. Barley will take up all of that. And then when you juice it or put it into a smoothie, you're going to get the benefit of all those elements. So it's a very inexpensive and better way to have all your mineral supplements instead of going and buying little bottles of vitamin E, vitamin D, God knows what, which is still a good value. But as far as your zinc, as far as your selenium or whatever, it's going to be there and in perfect balance with each other. Your body takes that in, and it makes a world of difference. The best story I ever had was the chap who told me that while he was getting chemo done, he was taking 3 to 5 shots a day of wheatgrass juice, never lost his hair, never lost his appetite, went through the whole procedure, happy as Larry, and the chemo did its job without upsetting his body.
So I'm just reading on your webpage about these, Wally. Wally's Ocean Solids, Wally's Unlocking the Soil. So I've just been growing my wheatgrass in trays with horse manure and a bit of potting mix on top. What you're suggesting is that I should spread on top of that. I've got MBL. I'll put that on. I should put some Unlocking Your Soils and some Ocean Solids on as well as the MBL.
Now, be careful with that horse manure. You'll start to neigh.
Yes.
Yes, too much of that going into your body. My God. No, look, as far as fertilizer goes, you don't need to because the grass is growing very quickly, and what you're looking for it to do is to take up the minerals, not to feed it with NPK fertilizers or anything, because there's no need. If you were to grow it on to maturity to get wheat from, because then of course you need the fertilizers, but we're only growing little young plants.
What would you plant it in?
I prefer to use polystyrene trays like you get from supermarket. Get my what's name? They've got a depth of somewhere around about 15 to 20 centimetres depth, which is a good depth, right? And they're probably about 40 centimetres, 400 millimetres, 40 centimetres long and about 20-odd wide or so. They vary in size. Some reasonable potting mix to go in that or compost, half-filled. And then on top of that, you sprinkle your for drainage, you don't make holes in the bottom. You make holes in the side just up and above the base of the thing. So any surplus water will actually, you'll get a reservoir underneath, but extra after that will go out the side holes. And about half full with compost. Sprinkle your Ocean Solids, your Unlocking Your Soil over that, a bit of more compost on top, another couple of centimetres. Then sprinkle your wheat or barley seed very thickly, so they're basically touching each other. And then with your Magic Botanic liquid mixed up with water, give them a good spray soaking with that, right? And then cover them with some sand or some more compost. And then over the top of that, and now you're still a reasonable depth away from the very top of the container, put a sheet of glass. Important. Why? Because birds or mice will know the seed there and they'll come in and rip the whole lot apart, right? Mm. Place that in a nice sunny spot while it's germinating. Take the glass off every day, give it a drink of water, preferably non-chlorinated water. You find that the seeds on the perimeter will germinate first because that's the water sheds off to the sides and so they get the most water. And then progressively the ones in the middle will germinate and catch up. Once it gets up to about, say 8 inches, and good old terminology, I don't know what 8 inches is, probably about 120 centimetres or so, then with a sharp pair of scissors and grab a handful and cut it off just above the growing medium level, two or three handfuls through a manual squeeze it out juicer, get that green liquid, and you must use it as quickly as possible, right? In other words, at that point of time, if you drink it, it's very sweet. If you were to take some and put it in the fridge and that night take it out and drink it, it's very bitter.
Right? Ah.
Why?
Ah, it's interesting.
Because the goodness dissipates very, very quickly, right? So you get the maximum benefit by squeezing and juicing straight away. And then wash down the equipment. It stains quite a bit. But you're getting a lot of green liquid that's chlorophyll in it, and that's very good for you as well, along with the minerals.
And do you juice yourself?
Yes. I originally used to juice for quite some time, like a year or two or three, because I found back then it had a lot of benefit to my health. My health improved immensely. And I was, back in those days, I was a heavy drinker and smoker. Mm. And, of course, I was in my 40s then, and I was an old man, really. If you look at my original books and photographs, I looked like an old man. In my later books, I looked like a younger man.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. And it did make a big change. Smoothies is another one which I really liked, because then you put in the wheatgrass and along with other green material from the garden, a banana for flavour. Yeah. I hate the cabbage leaves. I've got a cabbage taste to them, okay. So I never use kale or cabbage. But everything else,
celery,
leaves of carrots, silver beets, spinach. Weeds out of your garden that are non-poisonous, because every plant has its own minerals, elements, and antioxidants, right? And they're all different. So the more that you're putting into it, just like what you're doing, squeezing several different things, you're getting the benefit of each one.
I was surprised how much juice it could get out of, say, a leaf of silver beet, and how dry the fibre is coming out the other end. Mm. I mean, it really squeezes it out. And then I was surprised how enjoyable the drink was when I added other things in. I like to give it a bit of sweetness, like a tomato or an orange or an apple. And then how satisfying it was. It felt like an elixir. So the kids have got a job now. Their job at dinner time is to make a drink for us all. And so they get excited about what they're going to put in it. And one turns and one puts it in, and there's a bit of fun. And we only get maybe, you know, if you can think of it, no more than a tumbler full each, right? But there's five of us, and it doesn't take a minute. And it's quite wondrous. Tell me, can you grow that wheatgrass all year round?
Yes. Of course, in the wintertime, it's a lot slower because you haven't got the same amount of sunlight. Now, this is important too. This time of the year, you would place your box, once it's germinated, in a situation where it's either going to get morning sun or late afternoon sun, not all-day sun, because all-day sun is just too much for the grass, right? And you tend to burn out or lose its value. In the wintertime, you want all day sun, because the sun is much weaker, much lower in the horizon. The sunlight, of course, is giving the carbohydrates into the grass, which is going to make it sweeter. Now, a very important aspect here is and you've just mentioned it several times, if something tastes really good, it's got nutritional value and it's good for your body. If it doesn't taste really good, it's rubbish. And this is what you find. If you go to the supermarket and you buy some veggies, you take them home, cook them up, bloody no taste at all. No flavor, no flavor, no taste, no goodness. You grow them, and
well, I'm a convert, and I could taste it so delicious and so good. It was like my first glass of raw milk, or my first glass of kefir, or my first glass of kombucha. It was just delicious. So thank you for that, Wally. I meant to tell you that. But instead of fluffing around on Facebook, I thought, oh, that's a good deal, $100. I could have got it from Wally's for 90. Now, tell us about potting mix, Wally. Over the years, what's been happening to the potting mix?
Right, okay. Originally, most potting mixes had a good amount of peat moss in it, right, along with some MPK fertilizers, some garden lime, etc. And that was a very nice mix. And it was good to grow plants in. For drainage, they would use perlite or sand or whatever to assist with the drainage, because peat moss itself, sphagnum peat moss, holds a lot of water, and in some cases with some plants that you're growing, they don't want wet feet all the time. It's detrimental to their roots and they rot. But in more modern times, peat moss actually, I thought, was restricted in being able to harvest it from either up Auckland way or down, I think it's Canterbury, where there's great big deposits in the wetlands of peat moss. And I saw somewhere on the internet that the reason being is that harvesting it releases CO2 into the atmosphere, which we need a lot more of, by the way.
Need a lot more CO2 for our plants.
Oh, yeah. So, but then again, the idiots say that you don't have CO2 because it causes global warming. My God. It never has. Anyway, peat moss is still available. I had to do a bit of a search and I found, Yates and so forth have still got their peat moss. So you can still buy it, but it's a lot more expensive. So the manufacturers of potting mix are tending to use bark fines, right? Because they're cheap as, and that's what's going in, along with half the bloody tree as well. You sticks and stones and break your bones and God knows what in some of the mixes.
Bark can't be particularly, it wouldn't necessarily, it sort of would be pretty inert and wouldn't particularly break down, would it?
It breaks down. It's got a carbon content. In moderation, in the garden, bark or sawdust, good value, wood shavings, etc., because of the carbon content of it. But, I mean, to say, a lot of the potting mixes, you might as well just go out and buy yourself a bag of sawdust. It's about how good they are.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So some of them are fair to reasonable, but they're not good. So taking something like buying peat moss separately and adding that to it, or what we call cocoa core, which is the fiber from coconuts, and you wet that down, add it into your mix, and you can end up with a reasonably good potting mix like we used to have in days gone by. Potting mixes are pretty basic. In fact, anything that's a growing medium, like you can grow plants in sand, no trouble at all. It's just straight sand, right? The food content is there, so you've got to add the food to it. But really, the growing medium is only somewhere for the roots to grow and to be, right, to lock in. And it's the nutrition that's applied to it, like your horse manure. If you made up a mix of horse manure and sand, and ideally if you've got clay handy, add some clay to it, you've probably got a very good growing medium. It could be a bit too heavy for containers, but in the open ground, no problems at all.
It's interesting to have the courage just to do it yourself, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm sitting at home and I need a couple of buckets of potting mix to repot a plant, what should I do?
Okay. It depends whether the plants are going to be inside or outside, right?
Yeah.
That's the first criteria. Because inside, they are subject to a different environment. So things don't dry out so quickly. They tend to stay wetter longer, and it depends on a whole lot of factors, the heat in the room or not, or whatever. So indoor plants need a pretty friable mix that holds a bit of moisture, but not too wet, right?
Okay, so what would be a good mix for an indoor plant?
Well, you could use your peat moss. That's an easy one. And then add to that what we call builder's sand. Yeah. Now, builder's sand is the sand that's been made from crushing rocks. The reason that you don't use your sand from the beach or river is probably because it's full of weed seeds.
Yeah.
So that's a deterrent, even though it's still good stuff. And then you add a slow-release fertilizer, Osmocote, something like that, to the blend. Maybe a little bit of garden lime, just to sweeten it up. And there you've got a medium for the roots to live in.
And you can go along to your big box store and get all of that, right?
Yeah.
Like a Mitre 10 or a Bunnings and get all of that. And how would you work the proportions out, or just do it by feel? I mean, would it be 50-50? Pressure sand or rock sand?
There's recipes. In fact, I think in my latest article, I put in how much of such and such and so forth to do, percentage-wise.
You know that you used a bit of jargon there that threw me.
Sorry?
You put a bit of jargon in there that I didn't understand.
Did I?
Yes.
Did I use a big word?
No. It was a very precise word. I'm trying to find it as we speak, because I'm going to say I read it over and over and over again, and here we go. Soil can be added to your homemade potting mix at the rate of 1 to 10 to advantage, but no more than that.
Right, 1 to 10. So one part clean topsoil to 10 parts of the other material, right?
You see, that's that to advantage. I couldn't figure that out. I was thinking, well, he's telling me 1 to 10, but is it 10 bits of soil to one of the previous mix, or one bit of soil to the other 10?
Yeah, one bit of soil. Now, the problem with the advantage of having soil in there is you're going to bring the microbes and the mycelium fungi from the garden into your container plant to advantage, right? It makes the mix much heavier, so the amount you put in can only be on a ratio of 1 to 10. Right. In the old days, in nurseries where we're growing shrubs and trees and plants and so forth, we used to always put 1/10 of the growing medium into the container, or the PV plastic bags would be soil, clean topsoil. Right. And to get clean topsoil back in those days, we used to sterilize it with steam so it would kill any weed seeds. So any good topsoil was good value. The advantage was, of course, you had that extra nutrition for the plants, but the disadvantage was the weight. It increased the weight. And then when the cost of freight went up, particularly after the railways used to move all the stuff all over the countryside from the nurseries. But then later on, that changed, and so other transport like couriers, etc., it's all related to weight these days. So 25 kg maximum for a courier. And if you were adding in a heavy mix, in fact, even if you're sending plants somewhere from a nursery and the mix is wet, it's heavy. If it's relatively dry, but just enough moisture to keep the plant happy while it's in transport, it's much lighter. And so the cost of freight is reduced. So adding a little bit of topsoil. Now, I used to love sieving soil, right?
Yes.
And you can get proper big round sieves of different gauges. And if I was planting seeds in the garden, what I would tend to do, and I still do this with punnets and so forth, using compost, whatever, is run it through a sieve, because you get all these beautiful fine particles that come out of the sieve, and the bigger stuff you just toss it to the side, and you've got a beautiful friable layer in which you can put your seeds in or spread your seeds over, and then sieve some more over that, and then just gently pat it down and lightly water, or of course you soak the seeds with magic botanic liquid, and those seeds germinate much, much better. In nature, of course, the ripe seeds fall to the ground, they sit there and they wait till the opportune time comes, which means moisture, temperature, etc., and then they'll germinate, and when they germinate, they create an extremely strong plant because the roots go straight out where they're going to grow, and you've got a magic plant for sure as a result.
But well, it's such a great idea to make your own potting mix.
And you can make up a batch, get a big plastic rubbish tin with a lid, make up a batch into that, and it's sitting there waiting for you when you're ready. As long as it's the mix you're making is a little bit on the dry side, it'll be fine. It'll keep for ages.
Okay. Now, did we cover off the potting mix that you do for outside?
Oh, what? Sorry.
We did the potting mix for inside and outside, right? You just put a bit of soil and make it a bit heavier.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, we're going to jump down a rabbit hole together.
Yeah.
So I'm always happy to jump down a rabbit hole, and I'm particularly happy to jump down a rabbit hole with Wally. So you tell us what you've been noticing and what you think is going on.
Okay, it's not so much what I've noticed. So I have my own little place here, which in Martin, where I see certain things happening. But what happens is that I have people from all over New Zealand contacting me, and I, as a result of one of these contacts, I wrote an article called what did we call it now? Things of Concern, right? And that has actually created a lot of more material coming in. And one of them, which I found extremely interesting, was from a lady gardener up in northern part of the island, which I've got the letter here, or the email that she sent me. She's in a place called Kaio, in Northland, where I live. We get hammered with trails up here. These are the chemtrails, right? Some days our eyes flare up and feel like sandpaper. We can taste the metals in the air. One strange thing I noticed about a month ago, and I wished I'd marked it on my calendar the day it happened, we have a huge cicada problem on the property due to the past owner planting multitude gums and macrocarpus, which they love. The cicadas here in summer are so deafening, you can't even talk to another person outside. They would start on daybreak and not stop till dusk. Visitors would complain, and I was glad to leave the property at times, about a month ago, they stopped overnight, just like a switch. It was so strange. I've noticed some normal clouds the last month or so. It's actually been a long time since I've seen a normal sky. I can't stop staring up when they actually happen. In which I tell people, when they see a beautiful blue sky with white fluffy clouds, to take a photograph, because your children or your grandchildren will never bloody believe you that we used to have skies like that. Now, here's the interesting part too. We also have a myriad of traffic accidents here. People driving into shop windows in Kerikeri, accidents all happening within a short time frame, like they have been turned up a switch or something. Bees are very few here, even with the hives on the farm next door. Our white butterflies have been in plague numbers. I've never had so many aphids in our capskins and tomatoes this year. They look like they're some deformity, shriveled up stalks and leaves. We have a glass house now, and we have covered a lot of our gardens with plastic roofs and water from a spring due to the multitude of unknowns falling from the sky. We make our own compost and have a worm farm. It just doesn't seem to be enough. Our chickens are also feeling whatever is going on, as the egg numbers are way down low on last year, and we have young chickens coming through as well. The wheat we normally sprout for them is rank, and the chickens no longer want to eat it. And I've had another person say the wheat that they give their chickens just look at it and say, no, I'm not going to eat that. Strange. It seems that people are falling asleep at the wheel with so much happening at the same time. We have lost the will to stand up for ourselves and Mother Earth. Anyway, I thought I'd share my experience with our sudden cicada experience, which is that's absolutely strange.
So there's been this, you're thinking from people's observation that there's some environmental change occurring that's affecting the sky, affecting insects, affecting the plants, that you're very sensitive to, and your customers are very sensitive to, and our listeners are very sensitive to, and that over the years this change has been occurring, and they're linking it to radiation potentially, 5G, satellites, possibly this, I mean, this sounds like you're down a conspiracy trail, something that they're doing in the sky with aeroplanes.
Yeah, chemtrails. Now, there was an article a reader sent me just yesterday, and it was from the Northern Advocate, and there was an editorial, and the journalist there, my God, a real journalist, he was actually did an article on chemtrails, and in his article he said, well, this is well known, like the UN, they talk about dimming the sky. It's not a kind of conspiracy theory anymore. I mean, say, you've only got to look up if you're in an area where they do chemtrails and see these white lines go across that spread out and dim the sky. They're there. And people now, which I didn't realise, apparently there's sulfates in what they're using, and that people are tasting and getting in the eyes and their bloodshot eyes and so forth as a result of areas where this is transpiring. And as this guy said in the article, well, the government must know because it's happening, and yet they deny it. They say, no, it's conspiracy.
Well, I'm well used to being called a cooker, so you and me can both be cookers. Look, I don't dismiss anything, Wally, and I'm also very conscious that people can be making very fine observations, particularly those who are gardeners, and they're picking the stuff up. Most people wouldn't notice if there's a drop-off in bees or if there's a drop-off in ladybirds and the like, or an explosion of white butterfly. But gardeners notice these things. My mother would always notice these things because she was always in her garden every day, and she was very observant in her garden. Me, I'm just learning. And so it needs to be discussed. So, and like I say, after these past few years, my goodness, you can't trust the government any longer.
I read recently that the old Walt Disney films, they are doctoring them now to put chemtrails in the films, so it gives the impression that they've been around for like 50-odd years or more, rather than in more like the last 10 years, whatever. Isn't that amazing? They're going to doctor old films and put chemtrails in
them. Well, I'm still struggling with this one, but there you go, Wally. Well, Wally, you're a cooker. I'm a cooker. Probably half our listeners are gone because we go outside the official narrative and we think those vaccines hurt people. That makes you a cooker. And when you're talking about this 5G and what they might be doing to the environment or what the military could be doing or whatever, my goodness, I never ever would have thought I'd see the day, Wally, when they could be telling a little 10-year-old boy that he's actually a girl.
Yeah.
So if they can pull that off and then start operating on them, anything is possible. Well, I love the idea of the potting mix. I'm loving my juicing. I love your thoughts on gardening and the environment. Wally, you're a treasure. It's a pleasure to have you along. Before we go, we should give everyone your phone number. So the people that want to complain and call you a cooker can ring you. What's your number, Wally?
Okay, it's 0800-466-464. That's 0800-466-464. My mail order website is exactly the same, except you put www in front of it, was 0800-466-464.co.nz. And, either way, you can contact me. I'd love to hear more feedback from people who are gardeners, who are observant, and are noticing things that are happening, which are out of the place, out of norm. If we tabulate enough stuff together and enough people start to wake up. The problem I see is that you've got gadgets, you've got these bloody cell phones, you're looking down, you're not looking up anymore. Mm. And so people don't take much notice of what's happening in the sky, but it's having a devastating effect on food production, growing plants for food, because the dimming of the skies, no direct sunlight, reduction of CO2, plants need lots more CO2 to grow happily and better, and those two factors alone are causing problems. Then we've got the added problem. What's the stuff coming out of the sky and what detrimental effect is it having on our health and on the plants, the soil, the water, etc.? And then you've got the radiation on top of that. My God.
It's a heady cocktail. And, of course, at the same time, our poor farmers are being hit because, we can't put CO2 and methane in the atmosphere. It's going to cook us all. Oh, my goodness. And we're spending billions and billions of dollars and destroying business after business, industry after industry for that fake one. Good to have you along, Wally. We'll talk soon. There you have it. You're on Rally Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. They don't want to make a chemtrails and the dimming of the sky, but like I say, I'm ready to jump down any rabbit hole with Wally because he's so much fun. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.